Assalamu alaikum, this is Zulf Shah. You're listening to the Remap Your Mind podcast, where I will be talking about mindsets, relationships, religion, culture, and spiritual afflictions.
Okay, so in our previous episode, we discussed how medical misdiagnosis can occur when supernatural beings like jinn are involved, exploring the symbiotic effects they can have on those they possess and their ability to mimic medical conditions. In this episode, I'll explain how conditions such as bipolar disorder, personality disorders, schizophrenia, among others, are often misunderstood and misdiagnosed through clinical evaluation. Now, before I start this episode, I just want to acknowledge that no medical professional would intentionally harm their patient. Often, any harm comes from a lack of understanding in the area where the metaphysical intersects with medical and mental health. I also believe the metaphysical will never be incorporated into the curriculum due to the corruption within the establishment, and I'll explain why. On the positive first, the incorporation of jinn-related concepts into mainstream medical and mental health curricula would represent a dramatic shift that could lead to more culturally relevant and holistic care in some contexts. I think it would also challenge the current understanding, which is primarily rooted in biology, chemistry, and evidence-based practice. This could lead to the development of new diagnostic categories and treatment protocols that integrate both physical and metaphysical considerations. This would benefit the people. Now, on the negative, if jinn-based explanations for certain conditions were to become widely accepted, there could be a shift away from pharmaceuticals as the primary treatment for mental health disorders and some physical ailments. People might seek spiritual or metaphysical solutions instead of or in addition to medication. This could lead to a reduction in the demand for certain drugs, particularly those used to treat mental health conditions like depression, anxiety, or psychosis. Now, the reason why I say the establishment is corrupt, imagine the significant decrease in the demand for pharmaceuticals and the financial implications it would have on major pharmaceutical companies. These corporations, which generate billions in revenue from the sale of medications, are likely to see a decline in profits if spiritual or non-medical treatments become more popular. And I don't think the establishment even wants to incorporate any of this into their curriculum. It seems they're happy with the UK being ranked the second worst for mental health according to a global well-being survey as of March 2024, according to Psychology Today. But that doesn't stop us from updating medical reports to ensure they reflect the most current information and findings. And I genuinely hope this information helps medical professionals and mental health practitioners better evaluate the symptoms that border on the metaphysical. It's also important to recognize that there may be times when both medical and metaphysical approaches need to work together to help the patient return to their normal self or a stable state. So let's start by understanding the reasons people might seek assessment by a mental health practitioner. And there are many reasons for that. It could include ongoing feelings of sadness, hopelessness, or a lack of interest in activities that you once enjoyed. It could be excessive worry or fear or nervousness that interferes with your daily life. Difficulty managing stress or feeling overwhelmed by life's circumstances can also be factors. Other issues could include substance abuse, sleep problems, eating disorders, trauma, relationship issues, self-harm or suicidal thoughts, even personality disorders. And many of us have experienced some of these feelings at some point. And sometimes people may find themselves in a situation where they can no longer tolerate what they're going through. Their family might not understand and may view their struggles as exaggerated or a sign of deeper issues that they can't manage. And as you can imagine, this can leave a person feeling alienated with no one to turn to, as not everyone understands or knows how to handle these types of symptoms. And as a cry for help, they might make an appointment with their GP, hoping for some kind of assistance. And this is what happened to one of my most recent patients who, after an assessment by her GP, was diagnosed with anxiety disorder, and that was a confirmed diagnosis. She was told that her anxiety was due to taking too much stress from her children and doing her university studying. And before I go into the details of what actually happened, I want to pause here for a moment to explain what we might be witnessing that isn't physically visible. We're operating under the assumption that this person is experiencing some form of emotional overwhelm, a breakdown, or a crisis. To get a better understanding of what's happening beneath the surface level and what we are actually dealing with, I'm going to break it down and simplify it to give us a broader understanding of the mind and how it works. But first, we need to understand what a qarin is. From birth till death, every individual among the children of Adam has been assigned to them a companion called qarin, whether that person is a believer or a disbeliever. There are two qarins for each person. One is a jinn who incites us to do evil, while the other qarin is an angel who helps us to do good. The closeness of the angels and the shaitan to the heart of the children of Adam is something that is confirmed in many reports. Sheikh Ibn Baz, may Allah have mercy upon him, was asked in a lengthy question, "If I intend in my heart to do something good, does the shaitan know and try to divert me from it?" And he, Ibn Baz, replied, "Every person has a devil and an angel with him. And Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, told us that shaitan dictates evil to man and calls him to evil. And he has some control over his heart. And he can see by Allah's will what a person wants and intends to do of both good and bad deeds. The angel also has some control over his heart that makes him inclined towards good and calls him to good. This control is something that Allah has enabled them to have, meaning that he has given some power to the companions from among the jinn and from among the angels." So this will explain how our minds are influenced by two other beings that interact with our mental process. The jinn qarin is tasked to create negativity within us, and the angel that has some influence over us inclines us to do good. Ultimately, we are left to make the final decision ourselves, whether good or bad, as Allah has given us the freedom of choice, and it is this choice for which we will be held accountable. So every time you feel the urge to do something you know you shouldn't do, or you hear that voice telling you that you'll never succeed, you're going to fail and let everyone down, or others are so much more smarter and more capable than you, know that this is the jinn qarin we've all been assigned, and not some imposter syndrome concept that was introduced in 1978 by clinical psychologists Dr. Pauline Clance and Dr. Suzanne Imes. It's a qarin, not an imposter syndrome, and its job is to make us doubt ourselves and incline us to do the opposite of good. And our job is to fight those thoughts and overcome them. So this, in simple terms, is the purpose of the qarins and how they operate. Now, let's take a deeper look and see what's happening in the brain and how the mind is functioning. Imagine the human brain like a computer that processes information. It involves encoding, storing, and retrieving information. We have the cognitive functions, which include attention, perception, memory, decision-making, and then we have schemas and scripts, which are mental structures that help organize and interpret information on past experiences that are learned and reinforced through our interaction with the environment. When jinn are laid into the human host, one of the first things they attack and how they break the human down is what we call self-concept. It's how we perceive ourselves and our abilities. Now, breaking down the human mind isn't difficult for them because each person has a qarin jinn assigned at birth. And this qarin acts as a mirror image, like a database that holds all the information about you. And likely, it knows you better than you know yourself. As a result, when multiple jinn are layered within a person, it becomes a field day for them. The qarin is their go-to source for information on the person they want to break down. So, as you can imagine, this is how they are able to target and exploit the most vulnerable aspects of that individual by going straight for the database. Now, to add to this, imagine someone was raised with misattributed emotions with trauma. So they would incorrectly identify or assign the source of their emotions to an unrelated or less relevant event or situation. This misattribution often occurs because the intense emotions and psychological responses triggered by the trauma are not fully understood or processed, leading the person to attribute their feelings to more immediate or conscious experiences. So, if I could give you an example of a misattribution process, let's say a person who has experienced a traumatic event might feel a pervasive sense of anxiety but attribute it to a current stressor like work pressure or a minor argument with a friend or a spouse, rather than recognizing the deeper, unresolved trauma as the root cause. So they may use any of the psychological mechanisms like displacement, projection, or cognitive dissonance. So you're either shifting emotional responses from the true source to a more acceptable or less threatening source, or you're attributing your own unresolved emotions to someone else or another situation by projecting. And then we have cognitive dissonance. This is where the discomfort of holding conflicting thoughts may lead to misattributing emotions to resolve the dissonance more comfortably. So if I were to use a real life scenario, let's say a person who experienced a traumatic car accident might later feel intense anxiety while driving. But instead of recognizing this as a response to their past trauma, they might misattribute their anxiety to something more immediate, such as worrying about being late to work. This misattribution can prevent them from addressing the real source of their distress, making it difficult to heal from the trauma. Similar scenario I find with many couples is where either one or both of them come from a traumatic background. They haven't healed, they get married, and then everything in their marriage goes upside down. And over time, you'll see all the psychological mechanisms come into play, from displacement to projection and cognitive dissonance. But you will not hear or learn about the actual cause unless they're honest with themselves. Now imagine all this combined from birth. You're assigned a guardian, you've lived through a traumatic past that you haven't healed from, and you also have sihr with several jinn layered in. How do you think that will affect your cognitive functions like attention, perception, memory, and decision making? And how will it impact your schemas and scripts, the mental structures that help you organize and interpret information? Think about that for a moment. This is often where we lose mental health practitioners or doctors in conversation, as they don't understand the concept of qarin and jinn, because there is no mention of this in secular academic literature. To fully grasp the reality of what manifests from their symbiotic connection to the human sensory system, you have to first believe in their existence and their abilities. Now, if I were to describe how jinn connects to a human host, the simplest way to explain it is they link with the sensory nervous system. So this connection results in a combination of mixed perceptions and motor responses, which helps explain why during a ruqya, an individual might lose control or have limited control over their motor functions. Also, depending on the jinn's personality, especially if there are multiple entities, the human may take on the characteristics and personality of the jinn that is primarily communicating through them. So when it comes to ruqya and identifying the root cause, we're not just focusing on the ruqya itself, we're dealing with a living entity inside a human. As referenced in the Quran in Surah Al-Jinn verse 11, where it says how the jinn are like us, some are righteous and some are the opposites, and they belong to different groups, religions, and sects. Just as we have humans dedicated to humanitarian causes, we also have those intent on creating chaos. Similarly, among the jinn, some want to live peacefully, while others are focused on destruction, sabotaging relationships, creating blockages in people's lives, and manipulating the human mind. Now, imagine going to the doctor or hospital for a mental health assessment because you have no idea what is happening to you or why you feel the way you do. What do you think is going to happen in that situation? First, let me explain the initial process for a mental health assessment and who makes the assessment. So, approved mental health professionals, or AMHPs, are mental health professionals who have been approved by a local social services authority to carry out duties under the Mental Health Act. They are responsible for coordinating your assessment and admission to hospital if you are sectioned. These people may be social workers, nurses, occupational therapists, it could be a doctor or even psychologist, and in extreme cases, even a police officer can take you to the hospital or call for an ambulance if you're in a public area and it seems that you are suffering from what appears to be a mental disorder and in need of immediate care or control. I can safely say that none of the above mentioned will have any knowledge to distinguish between metaphysical issues and actual mental health conditions due to the similarities they share in nature. Now, as I mentioned in my previous episode, Medical professionals are unable to identify metaphysical issues because they haven't been educated or trained in that area, and they lack the technologies needed to detect these anomalies. So during the assessment stage, clinical mental health practitioners will often ask a range of questions to gather comprehensive information about the patient's mental health, their background, and current situation. The problem usually arises when they move on to the psychological and emotional health questions and ask if you have experienced any significant changes in your mood. Have you had any thoughts of self-harm or suicide? Do you have any thoughts of harming others? And have you experienced any hallucinations or delusions? Now, imagine a person who has no knowledge of what a qarin is, the abilities jinn possess, or the harm they can cause to humans. In the case of one of my most recent patients, an ambulance was initially called because she couldn't stop her neck from twisting, something she had no control over and couldn't understand what was happening. When the ambulance crew arrived, they looked at each other puzzled, as the patient repeatedly said, "Please, can you look after my children and don't let anyone harm or hurt my children," while her neck continued to twist uncontrollably. And when they brought her to the hospital, the doctors ran some tests, including an MRI scan, which revealed twisted nerves around her neck. She was prescribed naproxen for the pain and told, "You're just getting sciatica in your neck. This is very common, and not to worry, it's nothing sinister." The patient also complained of pelvic pain and bleeding, so they performed an ultrasound, but the results came back clear. To this day, they still don't know the cause. All they could say was that if the pain persists, they would prescribe medication, and she was told they would do a follow-up check. But check for what exactly? If the results came back negative, you've made several checks since and you have still found nothing. In terms of her psychological and emotional health, due to feeling extremely down and not wanting to leave the house, the doctor advised her it was her anxiety due to taking too much stress from her children and doing her university studying. She was prescribed diazepam because she had an anxiety and panic attack, according to the summary report. In her notes from the emergency department summary to her GP, it states that your patient attended the A&E in August 2023. Chief complaint was neurological and headache. Investigations were biochemistry, C-reactive protein, hematology, liver function tests, and venous blood gas. So after all of that, her diagnosis was anxiety disorder. That was a confirmed diagnosis. Discharge follow-up was to see her GP. When she went to see her GP, she was asked if she had taken the diazepam. She said, "I don't understand why I would need diazepam. It makes me feel sleepy. I have children to look after." She was then prescribed amitriptyline tablets. This patient came to me for a session after undergoing extensive medical and mental health assessments. During a rukya session, her neck began to twist, and a jinn speaking through her repeatedly said, "Don't hurt my children, make sure my children are safe." Then another jinn with a different personality spoke through her, stating it was going to harm her, referring to my patient, because it had been contracted to do so. So what's happening here? On one hand, all her medical results from the hospital came back as clear or negative, yet she's still experiencing irregular bleeding and pelvic pains. On the other hand, she's being diagnosed with an anxiety disorder and prescribed medication based on a secular mental health assessment. Now, when this patient says, "I don't know why I keep saying not to harm my children," it reflects a deeper issue that medical and mental health practitioners may not understand. When jinn are contracted through sihr, through black magic, to harm someone, they often abduct other jinn from their realm, including their families and children. These kidnapped jinn are then forced to enter the human body with their children held captive to coerce their parents or family members into cooperation. This concept isn't difficult to grasp if we consider real-world parallels. For example, in Gaza, we are witnessing horrendous crimes where innocent people are subjected to unimaginable atrocities, often in front of their own children and other family members. These situations can force certain family members to become collaborators under the threat of enduring the same horrific treatment. So let's make the correct assessment here and get a better understanding of what the jinn were planning on doing exactly. Not only do they want to inflict harm on this patient, but also have her medicated and hoping that she goes down on the medical and mental health record as another statistic. Their plan was to get her to hospital, knowing that the hospital doesn't have the technology to pick up on gene activity. The patient repeatedly saying, "Don't hurt my children," could potentially raise flags for social services to get involved, even though it's one of the jinn saying not to harm its children. And perhaps police could have got involved because it could have been alleged that her husband was physically abusing her, which might explain the nerves twisted in her neck. And it was only after the Rukia session that everything finally started unfolding and making sense. Now imagine presenting this case to approved mental health professionals. Picture this patient becoming aggressive, unable to explain the source of her aggression, while continuously repeating, "Please don't hurt my children, make sure my children are safe." What do you think will happen to her in that situation? For Muslims and other people of faith, this situation is easier to understand and relate to, as our religious teachings explain it. We recognize the existence of Satan, his agenda, and the creation of jinn. As part of our faith, we accept the unseen world created by Allah. The Quran warns us about Shaitan and his soldiers from the unseen, and the Sunnah of Muhammad, peace be upon him, teaches us how to protect ourselves from such attacks. I feel sorry for the non-Muslims who want to understand what's happening but are simply told it's a mental health issue. And the reality is, once you've been diagnosed and prescribed medication, that information becomes part of your medical record and can work against you in the future, whether during an argument with a partner, an altercation on the streets, or even a freak accident. All of these can trace back to that one visit for a mental health assessment. The number of misdiagnosed cases I've seen is more than enough to make me wonder how many others have been wrongly diagnosed and medicated. So please, please be cautious. Get a ruqya screening before receiving the wrong assessment. Your first line of defense is your salah and your adhkar. Make sure to pray all your prayers on time and recite your morning and evening adhkar. Protect yourself with the appropriate dua for entering and leaving your home and all the other important dua you should have memorized. And just to wrap this up, will the metaphysical ever be incorporated into the curriculum? I think the real question you want to ask yourself is your life worth more than the billions in revenue from the sale of medications? If you've enjoyed listening to my podcast, please like, comment, and subscribe as it helps grow the channel and allows me to continue creating more content for you. You can also follow me on my Instagram at Abu Amara Healing and also at Remap Your Mind for all the latest updates. Till the next time, stay safe. Assalamu alaikum to all my brothers and sisters, wherever you are.